Hi, I'm James Patrick, the director of Big Picture. In this interview, I spoke with Sasha Latapova, a former pharma executive who, with her husband, ran a company that would oversee and operate clinical trials for the largest pharmaceutical companies in the world. Let's hear what she has to say.
So my name is Sasha Latipova, and my background is I was born in Ukraine. I came to the U.S. to study in the late 90s, and I graduated and I worked in pharmaceutical research and development industry for about 20, 25 years. And when this COVID so-called pandemic started, of course, it's not a pandemic, it's manufactured, I became concerned, obviously, and, you know, I started looking into the data that was coming out. I was worried that, you know, maybe it's a dangerous illness, just like everybody else. And then I started reading clinical trial results that were coming out from Europe, from France, Dr. Didier Raoult, and he was one of the first ones who published that hydroxychloroquine works for this illness. And I looked at the data, it looked really good. And I thought, well, okay, it's not really worrisome because the data that I was seeing, it wasn't particularly infectious, it wasn't particularly deadly. Didier Raoult found that hydroxychloroquine works, and I thought, well, okay, then maybe it's gonna be over quick.
So
and
that was like March 2020.
It was March, March, April. And I thought, you know, okay, we found the solution. This is great. It's gonna go away quickly. And then, of course, all the suppression started of hydroxychloroquine coming from the all the health authorities, and that immediately sort of made me suspicious of why are they doing this, because this is completely, I just say, it's unprofessional and also evil to do that. And this was coming from the people who knew that hydroxychloroquine was a safe drug. There's absolutely no question that they were mistaken about it. No professional in the industry could say what they were saying about this product with a straight face and not be lying. So obviously they were lying right away. And that made me really worried. You know, why the government health authority that I previously trusted, had respect for, all of a sudden, you know, made this huge 180 degree turn and started lying into everyone's faces, especially because, you know, supposedly we were in a health crisis. So this is this was such a huge red flag that immediately got me worried, and I started looking into the data for myself.
So you previously had some faith in the authorities?
Well, yes, I worked in the industry. You know, frankly, I had respect for the FDA because they, you know, especially in my area in cardiovascular safety, they were sponsoring a lot of research, were interested in better ways of assessing safety and being more precise, more accurate, using smaller sample sizes so that, you know, we don't expose too many people to, potentially dangerous experimental medicines. So they had all the right drivers, I think, when I was working there. So that's why I trusted them. And then all of a sudden they come out and start doing stuff like this. I was completely shocked. You know, FDA doesn't regulate medicine in the United States, and neither does CDC. Mm-hmm. So they're not the authorities that can dictate to doctors how to practice medicine. It's actually, you know, up to the doctor's discretion. If something is approved on the market, which hydroxychloroquine has been for, you know, over 60 years or so, then they're perfectly in their right to prescribe it. So nobody can say no to them. If the doctor himself feels that this is something that can help you, you know, obviously they discuss it with the patient, but it's the relationship between the patient and the doctor is using approved medicine. Yet all these authorities were all of a sudden decided that that relationship doesn't exist, and it's up to the government to decide how you should be treated as a patient and how the doctor should practice their skill and their art and what they've been trained to do. The FDA primarily exists to make sure that the products that are sold in interstate commerce are in compliance with both the ingredients as they're labeled on the product and how this is produced. Because when you buy, you know, a pill or a liquid or gel or whatever it is, you can't say what's in it. You have to trust. You have to trust the label that says that this is aspirin and not arsenic. And also there is, you know, 50 milligrams of aspirin and not 5,000 or, you know, or zero. So all of it, it depends on the tightly controlled and regulated process of making these things. So the good manufacturing practices is the law in the United States that governs, and it's extensive set of laws, that govern the production, manufacture of pharmaceuticals and food and other items that FDA regulates. The vaccine products are not actually what people don't realize. They're not at all subject to good manufacturing practices or FDA oversight.
These vaccines,
well, it's problematic with all vaccines, but this particular COVID vaccines are not regulated by FDA, not regulated by good manufacturing practices. There are no rules and regulations that are followed for them. And everything that has been presented to the public as, the research and development and clinical trials and approvals were basically acted out fake performance to convince the public to go get injected. But initially, I was very concerned about what I observed from the data, that these products were produced in an extremely sloppy way. And the way I found that was because I was looking at VAERS, Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System of the CDC, and I was doing research by lot number. So in this database, you can look at the adverse events associated with a particular lot number of a product. In this case, I was looking at the COVID-19 injections. And that was showing an extremely sloppy lot-to-lot production of these things. So some lots had thousands of adverse events, severe adverse events, hundreds of deaths reported for that lot number, and some lots had practically none, you know, just a handful maybe. And that just tells you that the product is extremely badly produced, because if you, you know, I also was comparing to the flu vaccines, and flu vaccines don't have that. Flu vaccines are all about the same, and that data is consistent for about 20 years. So they're produced, they all have about the same number of adverse events per lot, which is fairly low. The largest we ever found was 37 adverse events in one lot. The rest were all around, you know, 3 to 7 maybe per lot. And here for COVID-19 injections, we have thousands of adverse events and hundreds of deaths in each lot. So this is all the flu vaccine data under this red line. Uh-huh. And that's how it's supposed to look. It's supposed to look like a horizontal line across the bottom. Mm-hmm. And all of these are adverse events and deaths for COVID vaccines. And you can see not only they're huge, but how variable they are. And then I started looking into more detail on the technology of how they're manufactured, what can explain this variability. Well, and it does look like ability to manufacture them as they're described has never been demonstrated. And that's always been a problem with making mRNA, because it's a very fragile product that breaks. A lot of chemical reactions go into it. You have a lot of steps, and you have to remove impurities along the way. And you cannot use any aggressive methods of removing impurities, because you will break the product. And so because they had to scale the manufacturing so quickly, so recklessly, absolutely recklessly, so there's just a bunch of junk with E. coli in it, with DNA. So there's another researcher I recently started communicating with, Kevin McKernan. He runs a DNA sequencing lab, and he sequenced a bunch of these vials for Pfizer and Moderna recently, and he confirmed what I'm saying, because he found huge impurities of DNA in them, which is not supposed to be there at all. So, but he found hundreds of times over the limit of DNA.
DNA from where?
From the first steps of manufacturing. So when you make RNA, the first step you need to do is make DNA. And the DNA is grown in E. coli cells, in big vats of E. coli with plasmids in them. And, that material needs to be cleaned, first of all, DNA extracted from those E. coli removed, obviously, as a contaminant. And then the DNA needs to be transcribed into RNA. So from that first step, we already have gigantic amount of impurities because, as I said, they can't remove them. They don't care, and they don't have to comply. So all of these things combine, all this garbage ends up in the vials. And not just that, there's a lot of other, as I said, there's dozens of steps of making this product, including using very highly toxic chemicals like ethanol, for example. And it also ends up in the final shots. The endotoxins end up in the final shots. Dirty water, metals, God knows from where. The ingredients come from China. Moderna confirmed it in congressional testimony. And we found, for example, metal contaminants, especially characteristic of China, which is antimony. Antimony is mined in China, and it's very toxic. It's used in semiconductor manufacturing.
And it's just like in the environment, and it ends up
in the just dirty water. Somewhere where it's coming from, the water is contaminated, and they don't care. They just ship whatever it is with the dirty Chinese water, ends up in the vials of Moderna. And other researchers I was interviewing in Europe, they found that there's huge amounts of protein. There's so much protein, and it's not supposed to be protein there at all. But there's so much protein, it's visible to the naked eye.
But that could be a lot of different things.
It could be anything. Yeah, like what is it? Where is it coming from? And depending on what protein it is, that's it, at the minimum, it can cause allergies. It can sensitize your system. That's why we have, and that was always a problem with traditional vaccines. They're always contaminated with proteins, of plant proteins and food and animal proteins. That's why we have people allergic to soy, allergic to chicken, allergic to corn, allergic to wheat. It's all coming from the vaccinations because
it's hypersensitized.
Yeah, it hypersensitizes your system, especially when it's given to children and they're growing and developing immune system. So that's a known problem. But in these particular shots, the researchers found protein, chunks of protein. Over, the last two and a half years, I've interacted with a lot of researchers all over the world, Europe, Australia, New Zealand, U.S., Canada, who have been testing these things. And what they're finding is a humongous variety of things that are not supposed to be there at all. And nobody cares. You know, in the normal good manufacturing practice regulated process, somewhere along the line, gets triggered that, we have flakes, appearing in the vials. That lot will be stopped. And then as a manufacturer, you're supposed to do a root cause analysis and understand, where that contaminant is coming from and be able to then rectify it. But the first thing they would do is stop that lot or issue a recall. And obviously none of this happened here, like at all.
Yeah, I think you, in one interview you said that some California county caught a bad lot and they just didn't stop it then?
Yeah. I just recently published on my Substack that story. So it was a Moderna lot and there were stories all over it, all over the place. Yeah, Moderna lot 041 L20A. And I'm quoting here specifically a story from CNN. And they shipped this lot to 37 different states. They shipped 900,000 doses of this lot to 37 states. And California Department of Public Health said that they are pausing this lot. And I don't know what pausing means because these injections and these doses that were shipped, they were never removed from the shelves. So Dr. Paul Offit, director of the Vaccine Education Center at Children's Hospital of Philadelphia, he's on the FDA advisory committee for vaccines. He said that historically there is no such thing as a bad vaccine lot.
Is that that's
a quote.
Statement?
That's his quote from CNN.
That's like saying there's no bad Ford car production.
No. There's never been a bad car part, and those letters from dealers that you get that, this is recalled and that's recalled, those are just, imaginary stories, according to Paul Offit. So there's never a bad lot of a vaccine ever produced. This lot continued to be sold until it ran out in March of that year all over the United States, and it resulted in 3,200 serious adverse events and 65 deaths all over the United States. And so that was inexplicable to me until I ran into Catherine's research, Catherine Watt on Substack. She writes Bailiwick News. And that clarified the picture for me, because she has traced all the legal changes, or changes in the laws and frameworks that have been utilized for years and decades. And that also points to premeditation, obviously, and pre-planning of this. So under public health emergency, emergency use authorized countermeasures. This is how legally these products are designated. They are not vaccines. They're not drugs. They're not pharmaceuticals. They're countermeasures. So these medical military countermeasures, when used as emergency use authorized products under public health emergency, they cannot be investigational drugs or devices. They can, there's the clinical investigation is not possible for them by law. And so therefore FDA has no business regulating them. They just, they're lying that they do. They're play acting. They're impersonating regulators. But they have no relationship to approval of these products. The way these products go on the market is at the say-so of HHS secretary. There are no criteria. Safe and effective doesn't apply. Good manufacturing practices don't apply either. The only criteria is that the HHS secretary, in their sole discretion, thinks that they may be effective. That's it. Mm-hmm. So that's why the FDA, the clinical trials, the approvals, the good manufacturing practices, they don't apply. And they're being used as props in the theater.
And what documents or laws or provisions is this?
There are six primary statutes governing all this. All this, yeah. So there's the Federal Food and Drug Act, Title 21, at 360 BBB. That's the expanded access to unapproved therapies and diagnostics, and that's from 1997.
So deploying unapproved, un-FDA-regulated...
Unapproved therapies and diagnostics. So this is the emergency use authorization from 1997. Then there's Title 42, Public Health Service Act, Public Health Emergencies. This is basically creating the, you know, so I'd say basically militarizing, I would say, public health by this act, and that's from 83. So that was under Reagan. And by the way, all of these are under both Democrats and Republicans equally. Like, there's no difference between Democrats or Republicans. They all went toward one goal, which is usurpation of power by the executive branch, and which is now has been accomplished. So public health emergencies is, you know, basically giving federal government ability to declare a national public health emergency. Yeah, that's again taking away the power of the states to regulate what's happening in the state and saying that there is such a thing as a public health issue that affects the entire country, which is BS, obviously. It's never like that. But they, you know...
So typically, health issues are regional.
Yeah, health issues, especially when it comes to sort of, I would say, communicable diseases, it's regional, very local issue that has to be dealt with. Basically at the discretion of the local or state, at least state, maybe authority. Even the state is kind of a reach, overreach. But, you know, here from 83, they're saying, no, we can dictate what happens for the entire nation. And as you know, even with this COVID, you know, even if you fully believe that this was such a disease that affected everyone, we all know that, you know, there were areas that never even had COVID, you know, never had, you know, particular high levels of it. Never experienced, you know, some areas where people more densely populated, you probably had more, you know, many more issues than the areas that are rural. Yet by this public health emergency diktat, all those areas have to behave exactly the same. And they have to follow exactly the same rules. And all, you know, the power is immediately grabbed by just declaring a public health emergency. you know, in some states, and I think Warner Mendenhall told me that in Ohio they declared public health emergency based on something like 6 cases. Is that a public health emergency? No.
So
but
suspicious?
Is it not? Is it not suspicious? We have 6 cases of sniffles, flu. They didn't die. They just had PCR positives. They were even, you know, not all of them were even sick. They had 6 PCR positives.
And how many cases worldwide?
When they declared it was 40. 40 in 8 billion people. Mm-hmm. 40 PCR positive cases. And WHO declares public health emergency. And then all the countries in lockstep declare public health emergency. And every state in lockstep declares public health emergency. Why is this not suspicious? And now they want to do away even with that. Now they just want to say, oh, there's a potential for a virus. What the hell does it mean? And we declare public health emergency, and all these things go into place. And you all have to be traced and tracked and digital ID'd and masked forever. And your children have to be vaccinated with these experimental things. All of this comes from being able to declare public health emergency based on absolutely nothing. So that's what was implemented in 1983 under Reagan. Then there's National All Hazards Preparedness for Public Health Emergencies, which is related, which was, you know, basically even more expanded powers and procedures and so forth. That was established in 2002. Public Health Service Act also for the vaccines established in 86 when they give liability protection to the manufacturers. Armed Forces Act, research projects, transactions other than contracts and grants. This is the other transaction authority that they're using to order these vaccines. We'll cover this.
Yeah, that's a very broad way of purchasing.
And then chemical and biological warfare in 69 is related. But the most important thing is this, the quote that I constantly quote is from Title 21 USC 360 BBB that says that during public health emergency, so, you know, utilizing all this, during public health emergency, emergency use authorized countermeasures cannot be governed by clinical trials, manufacturing quality, safety or labeling of FDA. So those rules and laws do not apply to these things. So by doing all this, by enacting all these statutes together, what they have created, they took out what was, you know, lawful and legal and regulated, and created a gray area, extrajudicial gray area for these things, for these countermeasures. And now they're pretending that these countermeasures are drugs and vaccines, but they're not. They're just this gray area substances that then they force inject on everyone.
Now, I've heard some critics say, oh, well, you know, they just use the military because that's just a quicker way to respond. And it's just, that's not necessarily suspicious. What is your response to that from a compliance point of view?
First of all, from compliance, this is complete nonsense. So the Operation Warp Speed is entirely driven by the Department of Defense, and that's completely inappropriate because it's deployment of armed forces on the American soil, use of the military force on American citizens. So the Operation Warp Speed was marketed to the public as, you know, collaboration between HHS and the military. And of course they wanted to de-emphasize the role that the DoD was playing and pretending like they were involved only in logistics. You know, initially all the stories were coming out that, oh, you know, they're just going to be, we have this, you know, they have this amazing ability to distribute things quickly and we're going to use them. And that's nonsense.
Yeah, it was more like, oh, they're helping distribute.
Right? Yeah, they help us distribute. Well, and that's nonsense because we have a perfectly capable pharmaceutical distribution system, licensed pharmacy distributors that can do the job and have been doing the job for forever in the United States. And they have much more expertise than the Army does with the distribution of pharmaceutical products. And they can do it quicker and better and more efficient and with higher quality because that's how it's built.
And so why is that suspicious that we see the military involved?
Well, of course it is suspicious because why is the military being used in a appears to be a civilian matter?
Why do you think they're doing that?
Because it's not a civilian matter.
What is the implications of a military operation versus a civilian one, or what does that indicate?
Well, that is indicating a couple of things, that it's a war on people. So they're deploying the military force, and because the result of the deployment of the military force is death and injury to civilian population, they're deploying them to kill and injure civilian population. That's the most reasonable conclusion you can derive from
it. So because the purpose is to...
The purpose is to kill and injure civilian population. That's what they're doing. Another thing that they want you to believe, that this is all pharma companies being greedy and just want money, and they bought off politicians, and they're just doing this by themselves. You know, they are having access to the Department of Defense to deploy the military, to deploy the military internationally, to force all these international buyers, countries, sovereign countries, governments, into these absolutely predatory agreements that even the first layer, you know, year law student wouldn't sign up to. Yet all these high-powered, you know, state lawyers are signing up to these absolutely predatory agreements by which Pfizer can take over state assets and military bases abroad, and you know, force the countries to suspend their lawful legislative processes in the sovereign governments. So you're telling me Pfizer has that power to do all that?
So who does?
Who does? Well, the question is, who does? Of course, it's the U.S. government. U.S. government with the most powerful military in the world. They can do it. They have the power.
And so what do you think is the chain of command here? I mean, it's mm-hmm. Do you think it's like oligarchs using the U.S. government?
So the structure is really like the big picture structure is the owners of the central banks, which are private and secret. We know some of them. You know, we can guess who those individuals and groups are. They're really private owners of the source of money. So they're the ones who can manufacture money out of thin air at any point in time, and that's how they derive their power. Then the executive layer beneath them is the central banks themselves, and obviously Bank of International Settlements in Basel, and then all the central banks in various countries, including the Fed. And under them, the executive layer is the UN, WHO, WEF, all these unelected, non-governmental, advertised as advisory bodies, but really the ones that are driving the policy, setting the policy and driving the policy, as we've experienced for the last few years, with all the lockstep procedures that every government followed somehow without having any legal responsibility to do so. But they all fell in line, you know, so obviously these guys have a lot of power. And then under them, you know, we have enforcers such as U.S. Military, U.S. Department of Defense, who are performing these functions, enforcing all these militarized, weaponized procedures and protocols, and biowarfare agents that are all disguised as public health, as medicines, as vaccines. But essentially what it is, it's unrestricted warfare using prohibited weapons of mass destruction. And that includes both the biological and chemical materials that they're distributing, pretending these are health products, and all the harmful policies, and especially propaganda and fear that they're driving through controlled media and Hollywood and, you know, all sorts of things, policies through academia, schools, and other mandates, you know.
You were saying, you're thinking there, mm-hmm. there's a pecking order of the countries, right? You got, mm-hmm. now this operation does seem heavily focused on U.S. and Europe.
Well, yeah, the third world, they kind of already feel that they're in the pocket, right? So they've been, you know, they've been murdering them for years, and they have always been corrupt, already have been regime changed by the CIA many, many times. So they're completely under control. So they feel like, you know, they're in the pocket.
And is there differences in the injury data out of Europe versus the rest of the world?
We clearly see that the countries that didn't get high rates of vaccinations don't get injuries and deaths, and don't get COVID either. So Africa is a clear example that there's no COVID there. There's no injuries and deaths. And vaccination rates vary. You know, some countries like South Africa have higher, obviously, than others. But where we have very low vaccination, there's no problem at all.
And is there a label to the product?
Yes, there's a label. Nothing conforms to it. Not a single thing. So it's absolute garbage being shipped, totally toxic, killing people, injuring people. And the regulators are saying, no, no, everything is fine.
And you explain the lying of the regulators by this military kind of national security structure.
It's intent to harm, intent to kill people. So because if you see bodies piling up for 2 years, injured people, sterilized people, miscarriages, children dying from heart attacks, and this continues for 2 years, and the people who are supposed to be enforcing the law are saying everything is fine and we don't see any problem. No, the only conclusion is they intend it to be this way.
Now, you're from Ukraine originally?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Does the history of the 20th century in Russia mm-hmm. and Ukraine sort of like give you some reference to what's happening?
Yeah, of course. It's the same as the communist regimes. And there are various different versions. They give them different names, but they're all about the same thing. It's removing it's various forms of slavery, removing the power from the individual completely and making them subservient to the central unelected authoritarian government that owns everything, and you own nothing. And that's exactly how they explain it to you. You know, the WEF says, you know, you will own nothing and you will be happy. It's a form of slavery where the individuals have no power, no assets, no real money, no real resources, and can be eliminated at whim at any point in time. That's what they want to establish for the entire world.
Mm-hmm. Are there any other red flags that you could mention?
The regulators have not done any recalls of these products. So there's another one I just published. Kevin McKernan did the testing of Pfizer lot, and that was targeted specifically at children. And so he tested 8 vials of the same lot, and he found all of them hugely contaminated with DNA, as we discussed previously. DNA is not supposed to be there at all. And I looked up that lot and theirs, and it has a very large number of adverse events and has one death in a child. So one 10-year-old died, and about 1,200 children got injured from this lot.
Is this normal for a medical product?
No, of course not. This would be a huge scandal for anything. If you think about, you know, food product, lettuce with salmonella, if you had a lettuce with salmonella that was sent to, you know, all states in the United States, and it resulted in, some deaths and 1,200 injuries in children, what do you think would happen? This product would be immediately recalled. The manufacturer of lettuce would go out of business from liability claims, and so would be the grocery chains. The lawyers would be all over it. The government would be all over it. They'd be shut down.
And in this case, how are they legally protected?
In this case, the government, this is driven by the government. This is driven by the United States, President of the United States, National Security Council, Department of Defense, HHS, FDA, CDC, all of them want this to be on the market. They want these deaths. In fact, in case of this particular lot, Javier Becerra, who is the current HHS secretary, personally went to Chico, California to promote these injections in children.
Now, how do you explain that? I mean, why is this guy doing that?
Because he wants them dead. It's his job. He is acting on behalf of the central bankers that appointed him to this position. I cannot get into his head, and I cannot tell you what drives this behavior, and that's a good question to ask him on the stand, you know, when he's tried for mass murder, genocide, and war crimes. Some lawyers are trying to go after Pfizer and Moderna making false claims under False Claims Act, right? So they're saying Pfizer and Moderna defrauded the U.S. government by selling defective product under the contracts that they received from Operation Warp Speed. But in reality, these contracts show, and I've done, you know, detailed reviews of these contracts and published on my Substack, What they show is that they're structured in a very deceptive way. They were written by the U.S. government. So first of all, Pfizer and Moderna did not write those contracts. These contracts are written by the U.S. government in U.S. government language, using several deceptive frameworks. So for example, they used other transaction authority, which is a way for the specifically for the Department of Defense to purchase weapons and not disclose anything about them and not be accountable in any way. And also they're structured for prototypes. So they were never structured for actual pharmaceutical products. They're structured for what's called countermeasures, prototypes, and manufacturing demonstrations. That's the scope of the product. Here's the from Operation Warp Speed and BARDA.
Mm-hmm.
You can see that they were, this was in October 2020. They were discussing at the, this was a meeting, internal meeting, but they became later available. Meeting at the FDA, they're discussing their vaccine portfolio, right? And what's interesting is they're calling this vaccine supporting efforts, but these are long-established providers that Department of Defense had, all these manufacturers, making vaccines and other products for them under defense contracts. So in here, for example, Emergent BioSolutions is notorious Department of Defense manufacturers of vaccines. They have, so they've been a Department of Defense provider, and they have exclusive contract for anthrax vaccine, which is notorious for its toxicity.
That was the one that there was the lawsuit over.
Yes.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And so they produced that one?
Yes. They have exclusive contract for that, and they have been making it, and always badly. Like, it has just the same
amount. Could you maybe recount that story in the sentence?
So for anthrax vaccine, there were big losses because it injured so many service members. It injured hundreds of thousands of service members.
This was in the 90s.
Yeah, in the 90s. And there was a big case, a big scandal. Nothing changed. So this vaccine was made by the Emergent BioSolutions. They were, Meryl Nass has a good information about it, but she's been recounting things like they've been relabeling them forever. You know, expiration date passes and they relabel it again and again and again. She said eventually some of the vials were, the caps were, they were so old that the caps were just like degrading and falling into the vial. So all this garbage was floating and they would inject the people with it. And so no good manufacturing practices applied to them ever and still don't. They still make, their processes completely garbage. So in this particular exercise,
they're manufacturer for the COVID shot.
They're manufacturer for the Johnson & Johnson and AstraZeneca.
So these aren't essentially privately produced products?
No, they're all Department of Defense. Private manufacturers do not have ability to do this. If FDA finds an unvaccinated cow somewhere in the field, they'll send FBI with tanks and helicopters to destroy those cows. They have that power. They have that enforcement power.
Mm-hmm.
Yet here, for years, the service members get injected with garbage, non-compliant, expired, produced in God knows what, in fact, there were inspections done at Emergent numerous times. They found huge violations, including anybody can go in and go out, security violations, sanitary violations. There were inspection of the Merck facility making vaccines at some point, and this was even published, I believe, in one of the, Atlantic or, I think it wasn't a big article in Atlantic. They found human feces on the floor, on the manufacturing floor, because the
angry staff,
either angry staff or they were too lazy to go out and dig down, and you have to like do all the decontamination, so they just like went right there.
In which country?
In the U.S., Merck manufacturing vaccines. So this is typical of these things. Once it's a defense contract, no rules apply. So this is all of their established manufacturers where no rules apply, and that's been going on forever. And here they're parading these companies as they're saying, okay, here they're making COVID vaccines. But note, what it says here. Here it says manufacturing, and here all of them say demo. Moderna is the only one that's not demo, but that's a government product anyway, and here's a demo.
What does that mean?
Demonstration. So they were all bought as large-scale manufacturing demonstrations. And so they're very careful about the language that they use because they know eventually this will come out and people will start going after them in court, like happened in with Brooke Jackson's case under False Claims Act. And their defense was, the first defense Pfizer brought, motion to dismiss, is that we didn't defraud the government. We were ordered to do a manufacturing demo.
By the government.
By the government, yes. And that's exactly what their contract says. They're correct.
So now all we can do is write an angry letter to the Pentagon?
Yeah, well, that's about it. And that's why they're so blatant. Here is another slide. BARDA bragging about their achievements. They threw around all this money in billions of dollars. There's half a billion here. There is another half a billion here. There's a billion here. To all these companies. And they ordered a bunch of demonstrations. So all of this was structured as a large-scale manufacturing demonstration, countermeasures and prototypes, not pharmaceutical products, and so no compliance, no rules apply to these things. And that's why none of the cases that are claiming that Pfizer violated some sort of false claims or safety efficacy rules apply, because those rules were not part of the deal. This one I show to people very often. It's the organizational structure of Operation Warp Speed. So this is turned on the side, and you can see that in charge of the Operation Warp Speed, we have Department of Defense. So
on the right side.
Yeah, so that's the head of this whole structure, like it's you're used to it, being in a pyramid form. It's just basically turned on the side here. And you can see that at the head of the organization is the Department of Defense as the chief operating officer. So it's not just logistics and driving trucks around. It's being in charge of the whole thing. And the HHS here is only an advisor.
Okay, and then we're going supply and distribution, security.
Yeah, so all of this is executive layer. All of it is U.S. government. The conclusion, as we've discussed, there are these various statutes. Catherine identified at least six key statutes that are being utilized here in a perverted way, in the way that eliminates Constitution, essentially, suspends the Constitution. And so all of this together makes essentially government-driven genocide completely legal on paper. Of course it's not legal. You cannot legalize a crime, but that's what they did. That's what they did, and that's what they're driving, and they're relying on people's blindness, ignorance, and compliance, and fear. So all of these mechanisms, so they want people to pretend this is not happening, to pretend this is not possible, to pretend COVID is over and we go back to normal and start going on vacations, while they're continuing to solidify this structure, and through basically, all these WHO-driven health regulations, treaties, international health regulation amendments, to basically now enshrine in law the crime that they have been committing for the last 3 years.
What approach do you recommend to remedy this?
What people really should do in this situation is, first of all, become aware and stop burying your hand in the sand and stop pretending this is not happening. Start speaking about it openly and publicly and call things their proper ways. What we can do at the state and local level, the governments can act, the judges can act, law enforcement agents can act. Congress can pass legislation or essentially scrap the illegal laws that we have discussed here, and that they are not constitutional, can be overturned just based on constitutionality. So can do the judges at state and local level and at federal level. So there are many, many ways to do that. And public, of course, by becoming vocal and aware, they can drive these changes, because judges and prosecutors are political animals. They follow the public perception, and the legislators too. This whole structure relies on people's ignorance and compliance. And if we don't give them that, they have nowhere to hide. My friend Catherine Watt says that if you find what globalists don't like, do more of it and harder. So that's what we can all do.
Yeah.